Welcome to our Torchbearer segment, where we interview people who are carrying the torch of truth and making a positive difference in the world. This week, we are honored to have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny with us. She is a world-renowned medical provider who has been treating people for over three decades. Dr. Tenpenny has been speaking out against vaccine damage and medical tyranny for years. We're delighted to have her on with us to share about the COVID-19 crisis and possible ways to mitigate its effects. So hello, Dr. T. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We're excited to get on with this interview and get people the information they need. It is an honor to have you on our show. And most of our listeners know who you are unless they've been living under a rock.
For sure.
Right? But in case they haven't, can you give our audience just a brief summary of who you are and what you do?
My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. I live in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm a board-certified osteopathic medical doctor that have been in the practice of medicine since 1985. And yeah, you can kind of do the math and figure out how old I am, right? And so and I've been talking about, writing about, speaking about, teaching about problems associated with vaccines since September of 2000. And when the COVID stuff came on board in March of 2020, it was just a natural extension for me, after already been doing this for 20 years, to just roll over and start evaluating and assessing all of the COVID nonsense, the myth of the mask, the nonsense of the social distancing, the fraud of the PCR test, and all of the things that have been, that we talked about in terms of the problems associated with these COVID bioweapon shots. And in March, in 2020, I wrote two eBooks that are together are the 40 mechanisms of injury of how the COVID shots can make you sick or kill you. And I wrote those, the first one, the 20 mechanisms came out in May, and the 20 more mechanisms came out in July of 21. And since that time, over the subsequent year and a half, everything that I talked about early on in 2020 and everything that I wrote about all the way through 21 has sadly come to pass. You know, it's one of those things that you kind of wish you were wrong about, but
absolutely,
everything that I put together in terms of the problems with the COVID shots, mm-hmm, and the myth of the masks and the nonsense of the testing and the fraud of the PCR testing has all played out to be true.
For sure. It's saddening. I mean, obviously people should listen to you more. And we're excited that, you're willing to step out and talk about those things, but it is sad. You talk about those 40 mechanisms of injury. Can you explain that in a little more detail?
There's the 40 mechanisms of injury. You can divide that into four different categories. The four categories are sudden and acute death, that they see a big spike of people right after they got the shots within the first 48, sometimes 72 hours after they died, that people died of heart attacks, strokes, or anaphylactic shock. That's in the first one. So that's category one. And most people who say, well, I got my shots and I'm just fine, it's because they did not fall into category one. They didn't die instantly. Mm-hmm. Category two is problems caused by spike proteins. The spike proteins are the ones that we're seeing now with all the myocarditis, the pericarditis, the multi-organ system failure, the neurological complications. And the spike protein disease, you know, I said from the beginning, we would start to see that somewhere between 5 months and 3 years after people have gotten their shots. Within 3 years, some of the biggest names in our industry have said that within 3 years of their second or third COVID shot, you know, we will start seeing this massive amount of deaths from cardiovascular disease, which is what we're seeing now. And it's multi-organ system failure, renal failure, neurological complications, seizure disorders, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all kinds of different things that are happening neurologically, which is spike protein disease. I call that category two injury. Category three injury is because you've got these foreign bodies that are these foreign proteins that are floating around in your blood that your blood wants to get rid of. So it creates an antibody against that protein to try to neutralize it and make it go away. Well, when that protein isn't around anymore, you still have the antibodies. And then the antibodies start attacking your own system, your pancreas, your liver, your kidneys, your joint spaces, by a process called molecular mimicry. And that is what is defined as autoimmune disease, that your body starts attacking itself. And the autoimmune diseases can show up anywhere from 6 months after you get the shot to up to 10 years later. In fact, early on when these shots first started coming out, I talked to several very prominent immunologists, two in the US, I'm sorry, one in the US and two in Europe. And all three of them said, you know, Dr. Tenpenny, we're in a lot of trouble, that we're going to be seeing massive amounts of autoimmune disease between now and the next 10 years, unlike anything that we've ever seen before, ever. And I call that the autoimmune disease, the antibody against self, the autoimmune disease as category type three injury. And then category four is kind of the catch-all. It's the big increase that we see in cancer. It's the big increase in infertility. It's the big increase in early fetal demise and third trimester fetal death, and the early and all of the things that are happening when we give these shots to pregnant women, all the things that are happening with the big drop in infertility. I mean, I saw a video, a little short video, day before yesterday on TikTok, of an OB-GYN in Florida, who said that the fertility rate dropping through the floor is really true, and that they had seen a drop of up to 50% in their practice already. And they monitored that by knowing how many new patients per month that they actually usually see, that people get pregnant and they call up and they want to, you know, join their practice because they, and those calls for new patient visits have dropped by 50%.
Wow.
And that the miscarriage rate and the early fetal demise, meaning third trimester death of the fetus, she said on this video, had gone up by 50%. So we're killing off old people, we're killing off young, healthy males, and we're going to make sure that those young people are infertile so they can't repopulate the planet that they are so desperately trying to get people off of. So those 40 mechanisms of injury, just to summarize that, you kind of I categorize that into four different categories. Mm-hmm. Acute death, spike protein disease, that much of that can lead to death, the autoimmune disease that's chronic illness that can go on for the rest of your life, and then the catch-all of other, of increasing in cancer, increasing in early fetal demise, increasing in infertility, and other things that may fall, other unusual types of things that may fall into that category.
There's no way to really tell. You know, I know somebody that had a baby recently and had a preeclampsia, who was quadruple jabbed, and the preeclampsia was never in her history. You know, high blood pressure, anything like that. And of course, they're not going to correlate some of these things to the bio jab.
Well, most people won't. And most people would refuse to. And there's reasons for that. I mean, the main reason is that if you decided to get the COVID shot, either out of fear, because you were coerced by your employer or a family member or your sister or your spouse or somebody, or because you did it out of convenience. I want to travel. I want to go on a cruise. I want to go to the House of Blues. I want to go to sporting events. And you decided to sit in that chair when everybody said, well, somebody made me do it. Well, not really. Not a single person in America had a gun to their head that said that somebody's going to die here today if you don't get this shot. Every single person who wants to blame somebody, because that's what we do,
right,
when we've made a mistake, it was somebody else's fault. Instead of saying, no, I chose to sit in the chair and roll up my sleeve. Now, when you realize what has happened with these shots, and now the information that's coming out is absolutely irrefutable, and the voluminous amount of published studies that are coming out almost on a daily basis now that show the problems with these shots, People would have to look in the mirror and accept responsibility for the fact that they may have unintentionally gotten a shot that they may die from. And they have to internally be able to come to grips with that, and kind of not the American way anymore. I mean, most people don't want to take responsibility for anything that's happened to them, good or bad. And for them to get their head around the fact that I made a bad decision, a really, really bad decision, and accept responsibility for that, it is 1,000% easier to blame something else.
Yeah, unfortunately, they can only blame themselves, and you're right. There, people just aren't going to take the time to, or not even take the time. They're just not going to accept the responsibility. We live in upside down world right now, where, you know, criminals have all the rights, law-abiding citizens have none. If you don't agree with the narrative, then you're in cancel culture. So, I mean, that's just the way it goes.
And I also want to add to that too, that to me, that's one of the reasons why physicians can't get their head around it.
Yes.
And why they still push the shots.
Yes.
And they can't get their head around the fact that they may have been murdering people.
Yes.
They may have to come to grips with the fact that they strong-armed or coerced someone into getting the shot, and they have to, and if that person died, they have to go, wow, I may have played a role in that. They may have to decide that, you know, suddenly that they were wrong, and oh my God, doctor's saying I was wrong. I mean, seriously, that's a problem. And of course, then there's the monetary things too. Oh, if I got to go along with the narrative, or I might get fired from my job, and you know, I make $400,000 a year, and I have a nice house, and I got 3 kids in college, and I can't afford that. I can't afford to do the right thing.
Dr. Tenpenny, this is Steve. It's the same reason why when the NIH put out their policies of using remdesivir is one of the number one ways to combat COVID when mm-hmm. an individual was in the hospital. And I firmly believe that all the hospital deaths were related to actual administering of drugs and procedures, and it wasn't from the COVID. Again, they cannot admit that they have been a party of literally killing who knows how many people. Would I be
millions,
correct in
millions
that?
Millions of people are going to die. They yes. already have died. In fact, there have been Steve Kirsch and Ed Dowd sort of crunched the numbers on what they can find, because we only have VAERS in the U.S., open VAERS. We've got the military database. There's the EU database. And so there's another big chunk of the world, China, India, Malaysia, Australia, that don't really have the tracking databases like we have. And but what they've been able to identify so far is that they believe, and this was a couple months ago now, so the numbers are probably worse now than they were then, that more than 20 million people worldwide have already died from the shots, and more than 2.1 billion, with a B, 2.1 billion people have been seriously injured. Now, we just saw the big data dump that came out of, that was forced to come out of the CDC. They were forced by the courts to dump their data just a couple days ago, where there were 18 million VAERS reports, 18 million adverse events that had not been added yet to the
wow.
to the database. And of those 18 million, there were at least 800,000 hospitalizations after the shots.
And I'm talking about just the remdesivir, the whole idea of even before they got the shots, they were killing them that way. So they're killing them
right.
both ways.
Right. For sure.
I just can't. You know, a lot of our podcasts are just like so upbeat, and just having these conversations, it's important information that has to be put out there, but it's just so concerning that we've allowed, as the people, we've allowed these things to happen. And the people that spoke up then, they are deemed conspiracy theorists, and I just can't wrap my head around it. I don't even know.
Wait a minute. Let's go back there. Can't wrap your head around what?
Just how this isn't common sense, that what we're seeing isn't common sense to people.
Oh, I see. Agreed.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I get we were just talking about, you know, how people aren't going to be willing to take responsibility. But when you hear those types of numbers, how has the establishment been able to hide those things? I mean, those are massive numbers.
They are massive numbers. You know, it's there are errors of commission. You do it intentionally. Mm-hmm. There are errors of omission, like, oops, sorry, I forgot.
Yeah.
And then there are just, if you don't talk about it, nobody will know. Like not adding 18, you're not going to one way or another. And so nobody will know if I did it omission or commission. Nobody will even know. And if there's 18 million, now I had heard from the beginning that they were very, very far behind and very backlogged.
18 million is pretty far behind.
Yes, yes. I had heard that they were behind, but 18 million is just insane. Just absolutely crazy that they had injury reports, you know. I mean, way back, this was what, probably a year ago now, that we got that Pfizer, those first Pfizer documents, mm-hmm. that first tranche of Pfizer documents, that they had over 1,200 different illnesses, diseases, and conditions mm-hmm. that they knew before they even released the Pfizer shots onto the market that they were going to cause, and many of them deadly. Many of them yep. deadly, all different types of cancers, all different types of like leukemia, lymphomas, all kinds of stuff with heart disease, blindness, neurological complications. They knew it before they even released mm-hmm. it on the market.
And so now
with all of these sudden deaths and things that are coming up, you know, every day, and it's, I do my best to be empathetic, but quite frankly, it's a little challenging when people go, oh, it's so sad this person died. No, it's not. Yes, it's sad for that person and that family, mm-hmm. but it should not come off as an anomaly anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not a one-off. In fact, I got a text message this morning from my team. There were four teenagers that died today that were reported in the news. Four. Now, how many more died that were not reported in the news?
Mm-hmm. Probably thousands.
Teenagers.
Yeah, it's incredible. And how are they making these formulas? How are they changing the formulas? And can you talk a little bit about lot numbers and standardization? You know, I saw you on a podcast talk about the Wyeth memo and things like that.
Well, the standardization, you know, there are FDA and whistleblowers right now that are just standing in the wings waiting for things to come up of saying that the production of the Pfizer shot and the Moderna shot was the most sloppy production that they'd ever seen in the history of FDA. Mm-hmm. And that there was no oversight. And because it was all released under EUA, nobody really cared because nobody could get sued. Mm-hmm. And so how in regular vaccine or just medications for that matter, but for sure for any type of biologic, you know, you have this, let's just, you know, visualize to say it's like a big pot mm-hmm. and you throw all these ingredients in it and you cook it. And then as the solution in that pot gets put into a set of vials, that pot has a lot number, LOT, a lot number. So all the solution in that one pot goes into these vials and it has the same lot number. Then you have a second pot that has a solution in it. It has a different lot number. And so that's how we know things in all the vaccines, that when you get it administered a shot or an MMR vaccine or a DBT vaccine or a tetanus shot, on the side of the bottle, there is a number that is the lot number that identifies that vaccine in that vial came out of that specific pot with those specific ingredients in it. And it's supposed to be written in your medical record. When you go to the doctor, you go to the clinic mm-hmm. or the pharmacy or wherever you get a shot, they write that down. Well, what they're finding is lot to lot. They should all be standardized, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we got a recipe. Here's a recipe. Here's mm-hmm. a recipe of how you make this. And all the same ingredients and the mm-hmm. same doses should all go in there.
Like
and
Coca-Cola.
They should be cooked at a certain temperature for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. And it should all look the same, except they're finding that they're not. And there's lot-to-lot variability. We know that from the German data that many of the lot numbers are, they have low levels of side effects. And then they'll be like you're seeing the graph, and then you'll see a big spike up of a particular lot number. Then you'll see a few more lot numbers, and then a big spike up. And it goes all, and they looked at all the different lot numbers. And, you know, when I first saw that, I said, well, you know, if you're the good guys, You would say, well, let's look up that lot number that had the big spike in the number of side effects, the big spike up, and make sure, let's see what was wrong with that lot. Why did that happen? That was there a different ingredient? Did they not put the right milligram amounts in it? What happened that that had a big spike up? That's if you're the good guys and you want to say you want to make sure that doesn't happen again. If you're the bad guys and you're trying to harm people and kill people, they're like,
You don't
that's
care.
the one we need to go and investigate because we want more of that one.
Yep.
So how do we make the deadliest concoction? And that spike will tell us how.
Correct.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. So when we talk about these lot numbers and differences, obviously we know that then they're going after those exact lot numbers in order to make sure that they're being able to, I guess, further their agenda. Is this the first time that government and big pharma and big media have colluded to promote a dangerous agenda, do you think?
Oh no. Oh no. They've been doing this for a long time. I mean, depending on who you talk to and what they say, is all of the kids that ended up with all of the all the autism. I mean, what was happening there?
Yes.
I mean, why didn't they just pull everything off the market and just stop until they figured out what was causing the brain damage in these young children? This whole, and you had mentioned that I had mentioned in a previous podcast about the Wyeth memo. I mean, the Wyeth memo is something that's pretty standardly known in people that dig through vaccine information. In that, the Wyeth memo was that it was a, I believe it was a Prevnar shot. When Prevnar first came on the market, Wyeth was the manufacturer, and they would take that whole lot, they'd bundle up and say, okay, this lot is going to go to Memphis, and this lot, this whole big box here, that shipment is going to go to Columbus, Ohio, and oh, this shipment of from that lot number, it's going to go to Nebraska. Well, what ended up happening is they ended up having what was called a hot lot, that there was something wrong in that manufacturing process, and they ended up with, I can't remember, this was in the 80s, I can't remember the exact number, but there was a whole bunch of children, like maybe 10 or 12 infants that died from that lot number that ended up in near Memphis. And then there was, and it was, and then the Wyeth memo came out from the then CEO of Wyeth that said, we can't ever do this again. We have to mix up the lot numbers. We have to mix them all up so that we ship all a big mix of lot numbers all over to different parts of the country. So if kids die, it's a one-off and they can't readily connect. Or they would have to work pretty hard to be able to put those numbers back together.
So they've been figuring this out for quite a while, and I found you in 2018 when my granddaughter was born, and when they first asked within 2 seconds if she wanted a Hep B shot, and at the time, I just thought that was weird, and so I told my daughter maybe we should do some research on this stuff, and I found you and some other people and really did about 1,000 hours of research after that, and you became one of my favorite people. So when this COVID, thing came
Debacle.
out 2020, you're the first person I ran to watch because I knew who you were and I knew that you had 20 years of research. What now that people have done this and they continue to do it, they're still pushing this stuff.
Advertising it on YouTube all the
You know,
time.
it's still
Everywhere.
happening,
Advertising everywhere.
and so people still have cognitive dissonance, and they're starting to see the light maybe a little bit. But now that they've done this, can you talk a little bit about the what is a tsunami of regret? I saw that term used by you.
Well, I've been saying since probably late in 2020, or maybe it was even early in 21, that as people started getting these shots, there was going to be probably somewhere between 5 and 7 months after people were getting boosters, we were going to start seeing this, what I labeled the tsunami of deaths, which that's where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, millions of people dying from these shots. We've got thousands of people dying every day. The UK data says that they're losing about 1,000 people a week in the UK.
Oh.
You know, we've got this big thing now with the CDC releases this BERS data. I just pulled that up while we were talking here. It was released on January 5th, so that was just last week. And it's just massive that there were 770 different types of adverse events, 96 safety signals in the 12 to 17-year-olds, 66 safety signals in the 5 to 11-year-olds, and that there was that the FDA was lying at about the number of risk factors that there were. So when I started talking about the tsunami of deaths, what I meant was I visualized it in my mind about, you know, in Hawaii, and I believe it's like this time of year, January, February, where they have the North Island has those huge 50-foot waves that come in, and the professional surfers from all over the world go to Hawaii, and this huge, big, ginormous waves come in. Well, that's kind of how I saw it in my head. We were going to see this huge wave of deaths that were going to come in. And as soon as that started happening and everybody started seeing friends and family members and colleagues and coworkers and students and all sorts of people around them just dying, it was died suddenly and cause unknown. And they started seeing this and they had friends and family members and spouses and parents and children that were just dropping over dead. That at some point in time, that tsunami of deaths would be so large that you could no longer deny all these deaths that were coming. And that right behind that, there would be all of these people that said, oh my gosh, am I next? I only got one of those shots. I just only got one, but am I next? What can I do to undo this? How do I get this out of my system? I'm so sorry that I listened and I gave in. And that is what I call the tsunami of regret. This massive number of people that are going to be going, I was scammed. I was coerced. I was strong-armed. I did it out of fear. You know, I did it out of social signaling. I wanted to make sure that everybody saw my sticker and saw that I got a shot just to protect them and all this other nonsense that came out of that. That they were going to start regretting. And every day they would get up and they would look in the mirror. And as they combed their hair, or brushed their teeth, said, I wonder if I'm the next person that's going to die suddenly. That's just going to drop over dead. Like we're seeing all these young people every single day.
And just knowing that gives such anxiety to somebody, just having to even ponder on that fact that you did something.
That's going to actually add to the stress levels, which is going to push that autoimmune system problem out the roof, isn't it?
Because even stronger. Yep.
Or it's the motivation that we need for people to start activating and start doing, you know, I've been seeing that for a long time until people start seeing it and it being a tsunami, then people just, oh, well, it's not happening to me. Oh, well, it's not this, it's not that. When they can't deny it anymore, then maybe those people will start activating. And when you talk about some of these people, you know, I only got one shot. Is there things that people can be doing if they did only get one shot to try to get this injection out of their body?
Well, for as long as I've been talking about problems associated with vaccines, which goes back to September of 2000, and I've written a couple of books that are not currently in print, but I wrote Foul, Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think, and I also wrote Saying No to Vaccines, A User's Guide to Vaccination in 2008. And the book really sorely needed to be updated, and because I didn't have the time to do it, I just left it be out of print for at this point in time. And the new book that has recently come out, Turtles All the Way Down, is just an incredible book for parents and anybody who's just now getting into this issue, not only questioning the COVID shots, but now wants to question the entire schedule. It's a book edited by Mary Holland and, I can't think of the second editor, but Mary Holland, and it's called Turtles All the Way Down. It's very well written, very well documented. There's something like 3,000 references on all of the problems associated with the 17 shots in the childhood vaccination schedule. And so, as long as I've been talking about this, you know, I've always said you can vaccinate, but you can't unvaccinate.
Yeah.
No matter, it didn't matter if we were talking about the crazy hepatitis B at birth, mm-hmm. if you're talking about tetanus shots, if you're talking about MMR, it doesn't matter which one you were talking about. You can inject it, you can vaccinate, but you can't unvaccinate. Now, can you mitigate some of the potential problems associated with those shots? Yes, you can mitigate that. In the childhood schedule, you know, homeopathy helps. And I think it's one of the many, many reasons they're trying to outlaw homeopathy and remove it completely from the market because it does beneficial things naturally for people. They have to eliminate those things. And with the COVID shot, you can vaccinate. And even with this one, even more, you can't unvaccinate.
Yeah.
Now, can you get out the graphene oxide? Probably, you know, you can do some chelation. Can you, I've seen reports where they take it, for EDTA, whether taken either orally, rectally, or IV, EDTA can mitigate the hydrogel. I've seen some reports where, and you can always do things to try to make your body better by diet and just normal supplements and clean living. But the SM-102, the polyethylene glycol, the self-assembling nanobots. Mm-hmm. I mean, the things that we know are highly suspicious that are in those. I mean, how do you undo that? How do you undo the genetic damage that was caused by the spike proteins? I mean, once you've sliced off of those, all of those sulfhydryl bonds inside of your DNA, and once you block the door on the P53 system so that the P53 system cannot reverse and get rid of cancer cells that you're making in your body and the BRCA cells. I mean, once you have damaged your DNA, what do you do to replace that? Oh, all these energy tools and energy technology. Now, believe me, I believe that there's a place for those. Mm-hmm. There's a place for like muscle testing and EAV testing and things like that. But until you can prove it, you really should not be making claims.
Amen.
Until you can take a cell that has damaged DNA that you can actually test.
That's right.
And you do a treatment or a technology, or you use a tea or a potion or a pill or a something, and you can show that after you've done that technology or that treatment, either immediately or some period of time down the road, that you have reverted that back to normal and have made it well, just like if you cut mm-hmm. your hand and it eventually heals. You know, making claims like that is it's great. Everybody wants hopium. Everybody wants hope.
Yes.
Everybody thinks that you know, I made a mistake. Now, what do I do to fix it? You can't. You just can't.
You know, that's something that people who had the free will to choose to get this injection, you know, have to deal with. But
yep.
We have, we're around a huge population of people who did use their free will to get this injection. Can it be transmitted to the unjabbed population?
Well, what is actually being transmitted, I did a podcast with a couple people yesterday, two different mm-hmm. podcasts, and we were talking about this issue of transmission. Now, people want to call it shedding, mm-hmm. and that's what's more commonly called as, but it's really not shedding, but it is a transmission, and they think it's exosomes of something. Now, we're not sure what is actually being transmitted. We don't really know, we're not really testing that. And some of these things that we want to test aren't even commercially available. Like, there's no commercially available assay. I mean, I can't go get a blood test to whether I've been vaccinated or not vaccinated to measure to see if I've got spike proteins in my blood.
Mm-hmm.
There's no commercially available assay for that. Now, you can go and get other you can get other proteins in your blood that you could get a blood test and be tested, like albumin and immunoglobulins, like IgG and IgG and IgA. You know, there are tests for proteins, but there aren't any for spike proteins. And again, you're exactly right. Surprise, surprise.
Yep.
Early in 21, I had said to talk to some people that I knew in laboratories. And I said, Can we make a an assay for spike protein? Do we know how long that spike protein stays in your system? Do we know, does the messenger RNA continue to make spike protein? The answer is we know it does for at least 13 months, but we don't know how longer than that because we don't have any long-term studies.
Mm-hmm. How can they even put out a vaccine that does this and yet not have the capability to test long-term?
How can they? Why can't they?
Why
they
can't
can do
they?
Whatever they want.
Yep. Yeah.
And they do it under this whole issue of emergency use authorization,
yep.
which from the very beginning I wrote a paper about. I want let me hold on to that thought for just a second because I want to finish up this other thought.
Sorry.
I mean, you can't assay. You know, if you can't get a blood test and say, okay, today I got a blood test for spike protein in my blood, and I know that my level is, let's say, 100, mm-hmm. and do whatever treatment, whether it's an IV treatment, an ozone treatment, a supplement treatment, an energy treatment, a vitamin, a whatever, a pine needle tree, whatever it is, and a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later, test your blood to see if that spike protein has gone down, and have a control group mm-hmm. that you're not treating, and you're showing each, if you draw 1, 2, and 3 months of blood tests, and those spike protein levels stay the same, but over here you've got these people that they've got high spike proteins, and you're doing a therapy, and over 3 months it has gone down. Now you have shown that that therapy has decreased the amount of spike protein, and you can make a claim about that. There is nothing on the market that has done that. Zero. And until we can have an assay for a spike protein in your blood, we won't be able to do that. And so all these people who are making claims about all kinds of things, is it any wonder that the FDA, because they're so snarky anyways, are going, you're making false claims. You're like selling hopium to people. It's not good. Now, back to what you had said about how can they do this? It's because of the whole thing about the EUA. Mm-hmm. When they released this under the EUA, there's two parts of it. One is they released it as a covered countermeasure. A countermeasure is a term that's used in war. That's a military term for fighting against humanity. The other thing is under the EUA, there are rules of how you have to follow. And from the very beginning, they violated two federal rules right out of the gate when they released this shot. Number one, they're in order to get something released under emergency use, there cannot be anything else available on the market to treat that disease. We knew from the beginning there was hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and vitamin D and zinc and all these things. So number one, that was the first federal rule that they violated. Mm-hmm. The second federal rule was that when they released this vaccine, the side effects of the vaccine had to be less deadly than the death rate on the coronavirus, mm-hmm. which we knew from the beginning that wasn't true either.
Yep. Yep.
So from the very beginning, I started this hashtag revoke the EUA early on until I got all the censorship stuff and I couldn't really talk about it, you know, because mm-hmm. I got kicked off of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And I had, you know, by the way, I just got reinstated on Twitter yesterday.
Oh. Whoop, whoop. How and exciting.
It is. It's and for people who are out there listening to this, it's at Busy Dr. T, at Busy DRT, Busy DRT. They reinstated it with 93,000 followers.
I was just going to say, did they reinstate with all your followers? So that
all the
in
ones,
itself.
All the ones that were remaining and our followers have gone up by 1,000 people since yesterday.
Wow. Well, so, we'll follow you.
So it's keep reporting. It's a Busy DRT. With under much pressure, we put them under a lot of pressure. We did a lot of campaigning, and it looks as though that perhaps one of my Facebook pages may be reactivated, which had 275,000 followers on it. I would really like to get my PayPal back,
because that'd be nice.
You know, I've been permanently banned from PayPal, and you know,
yeah,
you know, I really would. You know, it's really hard if you operate a business and you have employees, it's really hard to function without PayPal. They really have that whole thing wrapped up. I mean, there are other ways around it, but it's not easy.
Yeah, but, they made it all
you know,
hard.
When they censored all of the stuff that I was talking about, when I was doing hashtag revoke the EUA, it was because they violated two. There's four things that you have to do in order to release a product as an emergency use authorization, which gives you liability protection for that product. Mm-hmm. And the shots, the Pfizer shot, the Moderna shot, the J&J, they never did approve AstraZeneca here in the U.S., but those three that were approved and used widely in the U.S. violated two of the four terms of the EUA, a federal law, from day one that they were out into general use.
And they were able to just do it.
Wow.
Yeah, they could just do it. He who holds the gold makes the rules, you know?
True that.
Yeah, we're nearing the end of the time, and we could go on probably days with you. And we'll see you if you're in Tennessee next week. We will see that you. We were flying out so that, you know, everybody should follow Dr. Tenpenny, because I think you're the number one person who's done the research for that many years, and you know your stuff. So how do people find you, get a hold of you, and best ways to just keep updated?
Almost everything that we do is under the umbrella of drtenpenny.com. It's drtenpenny.com, no period, drtenpenny.com. The links to our podcasts are there. The links to my two Substacks are there. I do a Substack. drtenpenny.substack.com. It's called Eye on the Evidence, that I take articles from the mainstream medical journals and I explain it and tell people what that's all about. I release one a week on Saturday, and on Sunday I release one. It's called On Walking with God. Mm-hmm. And so it's a much more upbeat and happy and spiritual release. Yes. I think I write it as much for me as for everybody else.
Amen.
Just it's just something that makes me
God
happy when
good.
I write it.
Yeah,
write it. And that's
good.
On Sunday. It's called Walking with God. And I really made a conscious effort that I was only going to release one Substack a week, because I subscribe to multiple ones like a lot of people do. And sometimes I feel like I'm drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah.
I think people put stuff out every day and multiple times a day, and it's just too much. Now, the beauty about Substack, really, I just think the good thing about Substack is people are reading again.
Yes.
They're reading. They're not just getting all their information from, you know, 3 1-minute TikTok things anymore.
Yes. Amen.
They're actually reading again.
Yeah, which is beautiful. And sometimes we'll ask for articles from Substack. You know, I'll read the Substack. Can we republish this if it's really good? And so it's a good way to get
it. Epic Times has picked up my Substack. So they're out there in print form on Epic Times.
Yeah,
too,
that's
so
good. And we love the Epic Times. We're you know, a little one different,
day,
but
one
we
day,
love them.
One step at a time.
One
over
step
here
at a time. But we're, you know, we have them on our feed. You know, they've been around a long time like you. So you can't beat that, you know. But we all need to do our part. And, you know, everybody go to drtenpenny.com, find out all the information, find her Substack. We thank you so much, Dr. T, for coming on with us. God
You're
bless.
Welcome.
And we look forward to staying in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.